Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Seats podcast about food and life.
You know, I used to despise those stories when I would read about the great French chefs and they all had this story. Oh, I used to watch my grandmother cook. And I was like, come on, man. How can you all of you have the same story? You know, it simply can't be true. But then it started to dawn on me that this is my own background.
Today on Special Sauce, we have a very special guest, René Redzepi, chef owner of Noma in Copenhagen, which was named the best restaurant in the world in 2014. Nonetheless, René and his crew closed that Noma and opened a spectacular reimagined version of the restaurant very recently, right, René? How many months has the new place been open?
10 months.
10 months, wow. Anyway, welcome to Special Sauce, René. It is really a pleasure to have you here. Really.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And congratulations on you and your fermentation lab director, David Zilber, just published the Noma Guide to Fermentation.
Yes, we did.
So, you know, you're like a multifaceted dude, man. I mean, big props to you for the new book, for the recently reopened restaurant. I have so many things I want to talk to you about. So let's get right to it.
Yes.
First, tell us about your fermentation lab. Many people listening will want you to define first fermentation and then a fermentation lab.
Yeah.
So what is fermentation and how did you come to have a fermentation lab at Noma?
Mm-hmm. On a very basic level, fermentation is the altering of an ingredient through microbes. And we have fermentation in our daily lives all the time. A cup of coffee, that's a product of fermentation. A glass of beer, wine, cheese, bread. But fermentation is also so much more. It's also soy sauce and misos. So it's, you know, drinks and meditational drinks like a cool glass of white wine. And it's also food. And particularly in food, it is building blocks for how to make dishes. And so that's how we stumbled into cooking with fermentations, because we figured out that through fermented foods, we could make more building blocks for our cuisine. So many years ago, when we opened, 15 years ago to be exact, November 23rd.
Who's counting?
Yeah, I am. I was 25. And, you know, we stumbled into nature searching for ingredients. And there we discovered what came to be the beginning of Noma, particularly through all the forage foods, we discovered a wilderness that yielded so much flavor and potential. What happened soon after that is that we wanted to bring those ingredients into the next season, and particularly into the dreaded winter.
Right, where the growing season is non-existent.
Nothing grows. And, you know, we would have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kilos of, say, wild rose petals. And how are we going to bring that into the next season in a way that's beyond drying rose petal leaves? And so we stumbled into fermentation. We started reading about the idea of fermentation. We discovered that, you know, it used to be a part of our region. We used to do this to survive the cold winters. But of course, with, you know, Scandinavia becoming as rich as we are right now, we just disappeared. All that disappeared. We forgot about it. And today, in the supermarket, it's spring every day if you wanted to.
Right.
We don't need to do these things anymore. But we can do it for flavor and to root us in a place. So we start reading up on that. And we also discovered that in the world, particularly in Asia, there's an incredible active community of fermented products and fermenters that is so sophisticated. And very active, you know. You can find artisanal miso makers that's like 17th generation.
Right.
And it's unbelievable quality. So inspired by all of this, we at one point decided, let's take the role of preserving food, i.e. fermenting, and simply remove it from the daily chores of the kitchen. We won't be standing doing mise en place, chopping onions, and sort of with our backhand also throwing yeast and molds to the foods and hope it goes well. So we built a space for it and we hired people for it. And the idea was, if we find the right people and we just leave them alone, what can come out of it?
did you look at the University of Fermentation in Copenhagen? Like, where do you find people to do this?
That was the thing, because it doesn't really exist. I mean, you will have people that are specialized in fermentation, but they're like in medical. You know, they're fermenting specific things for medicine.
Or body parts or whatever.
Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, for food, it was very hard. You start searching within like hippie communities. I mean, the first time we found a SCOBY for a kombucha, to make a kombucha, we had to go to the sort of free town of Denmark, of Copenhagen, which is called Christiania. It's a bunch of hippies that live in a community there. And that's where we found it, of course. But for us, we first hired a PhD in flavor chemistry. She's American. Her name is Dr. Arielle Johnson. She's not with us anymore. She's now at MIT. And then there was a bunch of cooks that were particularly science interested and had a knack for these things. And so we just put them together in what was first 4 shipping containers that we bought dirt cheap. They were like 20 years old. And then we combined that with the second cheapest kitchen from IKEA, actually. Really, that's how
we did that at the first Serious Eats kitchen, too.
Well, we're in the same club then. And then we built these chambers of fermentation where we controlled the humidity and the temperatures. And then we started growing molds, yeast, and bacteria. And suddenly we didn't have just, you know, 5-10 different things to use in a kitchen. We started having like 100 different fermented products.
Wow. I mean, it's crazy because you said in the book that people have always associated our restaurant closely with wild food and foraging. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that the defining pillar of Noma is fermentation.
Mm-hmm. It's our bloodline. It's in everything from dessert to starters to main courses. I mean, even in drinks. I mean, it is such an incredible practical way to be cooking. And that's why we put it in a book, because I believe in it so much. I believe that people, when they discover and figure out how to use fermented products in their daily lives, cooking will be better and easier. Because it's like having, you know, to us, we always describe it as before fermenting, we had like a handful of Legos. Fermentation is basically adult Legos you play with. And then as we start fermenting, it was like 2 basketfuls of them. And it's up to us as cooks to figure out how to build with them and what goes what, where, and how. And once you figure that out, cooking becomes easier and more delicious.
That's interesting. Did your cooks know how to utilize it when they first started?
No. And I mean, honestly, we're still learning how to do that. You know, at the fermentation lab, they keep producing all these things. I mean, what was it lately? Oh, it was a chocolate vinegar. And, you know, chocolate vinegar.
I've been making chocolate vinegar actually for about 20 years.
Oh,
you just didn't know it, man.
I could
have saved you a lot of time and energy.
Should have. We just call you up next time. Is that for real?
No. I totally made that up.
But this was a chocolate vinegar with the best chocolate I've tasted from Mexico. And it was this clear liquid that tasted like chocolate and then with vinegar. And it was unbelievable. Honestly, it's unbelievable. And how do you use that?
Right.
Where?
Like,
is that with fish?
Are we talking salads, fish, or dessert?
We're not 100% sure. So that's the thing about new stuff and newness, is that you're paving the road as you walk. You know, you there's nothing laid out in front of you. So we figure these things out all the time. And I guess that's also what we enjoy. And that's also sometimes the problem of working at Noma.
You like being confronted by the unfamiliar.
I don't know what it is.
that's what I've concluded after reading about you. You're not comfortable with comfort. You don't want people to be comfortable in terms of their work in the kitchen. You want your guests to be comfortable,
sure.
Obviously. Yeah. But I think you thrive on not chaos, but pushing the
organized
envelope.
Chaos.
Yeah.
You know, as we were closing the old Noma, we were about 9 years in. This is 6 years ago we made the decision to close Noma. And we were very successful. We had
You were crazy successful. Like, why did you close Noma?
Well, we closed it because have you ever gone to work and feel like it's starting to be routine?
See, you hate routine more than anyone I know, maybe except for me. I hate routine too.
Yeah. So this was the thing. You start going to work and we had all this success. And you know, success is amazing. But the problem with it is that it somehow limits you. Somehow you start only looking at those exact things that made you success or the most visible parts of your success.
And you're a searcher.
And that becomes who you are. You become defined by that. And suddenly you're moving those same pieces around again and again and again. And the decision was sort of made just a gut instinct. Okay, we're young. Let's do it again. You know, why don't we just close up and then we'll see what happens. So we put all the wheels into motion and we decided to close. And honestly, it was no more than 2 weeks after that we found this incredible space that's not very far from actually the old Noma. And it's on a lake. It's surrounded by the fortification of Copenhagen that's built 400 years ago, which means everything is listed. It's in the community of Christiania, the old hippie community. So there's, you know...
So you found a lot of fermentation people.
Fermentation. and you know, it's fairly quiet, actually, and green, the neighborhood. It was perfect. And we fell in love with it, and then we just started planning for a big move.
But you were starting from scratch, right? I mean, there wasn't a building, there was nothing.
We built
right?
everything. It was from scratch. Oh yeah, from scratch. I mean, there was one old building that was made in 1939 due to the the pending Second World War, and it was made as a bomb storage.
Wow.
As actually mines, ocean mines. And it was derelict. It was a ruin. There was like graffiti and, you know, people used it as a drug den.
Wow. Did you keep that structure?
That's there, yeah. I mean, we cleaned it up and the fermentation lab actually is in there today. Funny story, when we were starting to dig on the property, at a certain point, one of those big diggers, I don't know what you call them, hit a piece of metal. Or so they thought. And it was actually an old mine they hid in the ground.
Wow.
I like that story. You know, the fact that there was a bomb right underneath our feet. And that's where we're moving in.
I can sort of figure out why you like that story. Yeah.
So we started planning for this, well, like I said, almost 6 years ago. And it's been a crazy ride to open this place. And 10 months now we've been open.
You know, I read a piece about the reopening and there were many struggles that you didn't think you were going to be dealing with that mm-hmm. you had to deal with, you know, because you're building something from the ground up, yeah. right? You're not superimposing your will on an existing structure.
Yeah. That was the thing. And then because it's a sort of a historical, historical sites will always be a problem in Copenhagen. It's an old town. So every time you dig in a historical site, you have to have an archaeologist next to you.
Wow.
And if the archaeologist sees a little bit in the ground, it could be whatever, everything gets halt. And the archaeologist jumps into the ground and starts, you know, with a little broomstick, actually figuring out if there's anything. And at a certain point, they found an old wall in the ground. And the whole build was stopped for like 3 months. But at that time, we didn't know what it was. I mean, if it was something important, it was over.
Wow.
So, but because of that, we also ended up being delayed almost 7 months.
And
we had the entire team on staff.
You're going through a lot of cash because mm-hmm. you're paying those people. And you, at some point, you started taking reservations.
Yep.
And then you were taking reservations without the restaurant being open.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can see many, I guess... You know, reality shows about, oh, the day before, you know, they're painting. But 2 weeks before, there was no roof in the buildings. Really?
I don't mean to laugh.
There were 80 craftsmen building 20 hours a day. It was insanely expensive. Plus the 100 team of Noma were on the building site, helping, carrying, cleaning, building. I mean, we were there doing stuff. So it was almost 200 people for 1 month straight.
Working day and night.
Day and night. To finish this project. And then the builders were like so tired as we were done. Oh, we're done, they said. But we were just getting started. You know, that was time for us to actually do the work. It was a crazy time. Honestly, it's the craziest I've ever tried.
Do you think you might have pushed the envelope a little too far?
Possibly, yes. Possibly, yes. But, you know, I mean, as you're building, everybody's saying, oh, this is no problem. We'll make it. And then they find an old wall and then this and that. And then the glass shatters. And, I mean, suddenly you're 7 months delayed. And
people must be very loyal to you. One of the things I've noticed about the people that you hire and that spend time at NoMa, and then when they leave, they do really interesting things. And there's a guy that's trying to help serving healthy school lunches. Mm-hmm. I forgot. He was your executive chef, right?
He was, Dan Giusti.
Yeah, and he moved to New London, Connecticut, yeah, to try to figure out how to serve good school meals for $1.25. Mm-hmm. And now he's in the Bronx, right?
He's in New York now.
So how do you hire?
Oof. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's one of these gut feelings. The most difficult thing is figuring out where what people are good at. Because in a kitchen, you know, you might have somebody that's excellent at frying fish or cooking fish, but doesn't mean that they can actually lead people. And the person who's not very good at frying fish might be amazing at organizing a crew. And because you're very creative, it doesn't mean that you're a good leader. And so figuring all these things out, that is, I think, my biggest role today, actually, being in the middle of all this. For instance, on the book cover, there's a person called David Zilber. He's Canadian. And I mean, he's an incredible, incredible cook. His mind is like unlike anyone's. And he's taken this fermentation program to a place where I could never have hoped for.
And he says that he wrote you a blind letter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he wrote a letter to 3, I think, 11 Madison Park, Alinea, and you, mm-hmm, and you were the only one that responded.
Well, it was like a 32-page letter, you know, something like that. And, you know, it was filled with all these references. And
well, no wonder they didn't answer. Who wants to read a 32-page letter?
We did. I mean, it wasn't 32. Maybe it was like 4 or 5. But still, most people are like, when you hire cooks, it's like they put where they worked and explain a tiny bit about themselves. They're typically full of spelling mistakes. And then that's it, you know. This was a different story. And he was a sous chef at the best restaurant in Canada at the time. He wanted to come and just take whatever job there was available. And as soon as he arrived at the restaurant, it was clear this guy was special. You know, in the break, when people were sitting having some dinner, and, you know, they might be on Instagram and looking, checking up on all their socials and stuff, he'd be reading books about quantum physics. And honestly, his mind is just set up in a different way to what we usually see in a kitchen.
Yeah. And someone once described him as the Wikipedia of chefs.
Yeah, that's true. He has the answer to most things that you don't know about. He will know, or he will find out about it. I mean, every day at the restaurant, we have this educational moment. So before each service, we have like a 5-minute moment in which a team member, but typically it's David that does it, comes and explains to us a topic that one other team member have requested. So, for instance, it could be anything from where does oceans come from? And then that person is, you know, to investigate and read and compile it into like a 5-minute
presentation.
And then we go off and we go into service. And David, he's extremely good at doing those. Like extremely good. We learn about the world in an incredible way.
And he is this fascinating background because he's half Afro-Caribbean, mm-hmm, and half Ashkenazic Jew, I, mm-hmm, believe
it's
I
true.
Read. And
yeah, when he talks about food, he talks about gefilte fish and Jamaican patties at the same time.
That's probably one of the coolest things ever. Yeah. Talking about gefilte fish and meat patties,
yeah,
in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Incredibly.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's him.
Did he ever make meat patties for family meat?
No.
Oh, come on, man. I want to talk to him about that.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about the origins of NoMa and your story. Mm-hmm. You know, because from what I've read, you grew up, your dad was a Albanian-born Macedonian.
Mm-hmm. Back then it was called Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavian. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of money in your house. You very movingly answered a question by saying often you were eating toast at the, mm-hmm. you know, by the time when you were waiting for his next paycheck, mm-hmm. you know. And yet somehow you just imagine yourself being somewhere else. Like, how did that come about? Like, and do you think that being an outsider mm-hmm. in a relatively homogeneous country like Denmark was an inspiration to you?
Could even have been the decisive factor, actually. I mean, yes, I grew up in a mixed to Denmark, a mixed background. And my father, he was a Muslim. He passed away recently. And, you know, I grew up eating predominantly Turkish type food, Albanian Turkish food. I never really grew up with the traditional Danish staples, even hearing the Danish stories and stuff like that. So when it was time for Noma to open, it was actually amazing because you'd go on research trips and you'd taste a flatbread. And I'd be like, wow, this is amazing. And then, you know, the person next to me would say, well, it's just flatbread, you know. I ate that yesterday.
And you didn't.
And I didn't. And so you saw it in a different light, and you didn't have that upbringing where it was just, you know, the daily stuff. And so that helped me tremendously. What also helped me in my background was, you know, we grew up partially in the old, or in Macedonia. And it was a very rural lifestyle. You know, if you wanted to visit a neighbor, you went on a horse. Water would be sometimes 3-4 hours in the day that you could actually have running water. If you showered, it would be, there was no hot water, by the way. If you showered, it would be like you put this heater thing into water. And then this tub of water would be hot, you'd bathe in it. There had no refrigerators at home. Every single meal was cooked. And, you know, they were farmers. They worked the land. If you want a glass of milk, you milked a cow.
Right.
If you wanted butter, you had to churn the cream.
Which has sort of got you to what you try to do at Noma.
I guess so. You know, I used to despise those stories when I would read about the great French chefs and they all had this story. Oh, I used to watch my grandmother cook. And I was like, come on, man. How can you all of you have the same story? You know, it simply can't be true. But then it started to dawn on me that this is my own background that's happening right now. This is, you know, the reason why I have had the drive that I have is because when you grow up with nothing and even trying to go home, going hungry to bed often as a child, this urge to make it was just a really, really powerful urge I had when we first started. I wanted to make it no matter what.
I could tell. Like mm-hmm. you had like a Madonna-like focus, mm-hmm. you know. I did a little bit of work in the music business, and I met a very young Madonna. And it was like what you could tell is how focused she was mm-hmm. on getting where she wanted to go. Not that you're – what you do is anything like Madonna, but I do feel that sort of intensity and focus. And where did it come from? Did it come from either of your parents?
No, I mean, my parents, they were super cool always. They were like, we don't care what you do. I mean, if you want to sweep the streets, as long as you're happy with that, there was never any pressure. I mean, often with immigrant families in Denmark, you know, there'd be these unrealistic expectations to the kids, like you have to be an engineer, you have to be a doctor or something like that. My parents never said that at all.
Really?
No, never. I don't know. I think I just wanted to succeed. You just wanted to make something more out of yourself and make sure that somehow the sacrifices they made, because they made plenty, would be put into good use, you know,
yeah.
That I'd make sure to grab this opportunity. And, you know, at first it wasn't in the cards that I was going to become the chef that I've become or the Noma to become the restaurant it has become, because I left ninth grade in school and it was in dishonor.
You mean they left you?
They left me. And what do you do when you're sort of left with nowhere to go? I was back then in Denmark, they checked a box whether you were eligible for high school or not. And if you weren't eligible for high school, you were not going to high school. And I was not eligible for high school. This is the Danish style of high school.
Right.
It's called gymnasium. And so there was nothing to do but take like a craftsman's education. And luckily for me, my best friend at the time, he always wanted to be a cook. So I just tagged along.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how it happened?
That's how it started.
So you really didn't have any idea that that would be your path. It was a path that presented itself.
Completely. Like, I feel that's been the story of my life. And then even more luckily, when we actually went into the school in the first week, there was a competition in school. And we joined up in teams, me and my friend. It was teams of two. And we had to cook a dish to our liking. And it had to be judged on the flavor and also how it was dressed on the plate. And that moment for me was pivotal. I'm 15 years old. I never thought about food before.
Right.
I didn't even know what I liked
food
about food.
Food was fuel.
Food was just something, you know, that you did. I was worrying about girls. But suddenly there's this competition happening. And then you're there and I was like, oh, what do I select? What do I, you know, you ask yourself the question, what do I like about food?
Right.
And that question was a big moment for me. And so as you think, you start flicking through magazines and books. And, you know, you used to go to the library. You couldn't Google anything. And I flick these pages of magazines and books, and suddenly there's this image of a roast chicken. And to me, it was like, wow, this is it. We have to cook the roast chicken. Because it was suddenly I remembered the roast chicken is actually one of my favorite things to eat when we had that as children. And it was a rare thing, a rare treat for us to get. And I started remembering all these things from my childhood that in Macedonia, when we'd had guests suddenly, then you'd had meat.
Right.
Typically, you'd just
otherwise,
eat beans or lentils or something. And, you know, sometimes the door would knock and there'd be guests. And my aunts, they would then catch a chicken and chop the head off and pluck the feathers and roast it in the wood-fired oven. And we'd watch it as it went from, you know, pale to golden. And you could remember all these sounds of the crackling chicken and the steam that rises. And we cooked the chicken. We cooked it with a cashew nut sauce. And I remember to me thinking, even as we chose the cashew nut sauce, I was like, why the cashew nut sauce? Because I'd never heard of it, cashew nuts before, but I loved nuts. But we did it because it was something new. And I was like, why do I suddenly think like this? I couldn't even understand myself. You know, why does this matter?
That is
something new. And then we cooked it. And then I remember also as we were dressing the chicken, my friend Michael was his name. He was about to put the sauce on the chicken. And I stopped him. And I still remember that feeling of thinking, hang on, in myself, this goes on in like a second. Why does it matter where the sauce is? Why am I stopping him now? I don't know myself. Where does all this come? I really remember this.
That's so crazy that you're still, you really don't know any better or any different, but
no.
You still were asking the questions.
And I just said, Michael, can we put the sauce right here? And I thought there was a perfect little spot in between the rice and the chicken where the sauce could be so you could see all the ingredients. And then we did that. And then we won for best plating, but we were number two in taste because there was a trained butcher who went on to be a cook. He did a ham salad that was like unbeatable, apparently.
Well, you came in second.
Yeah, we came in second. And I was 15 at that time. And this was a complete transformation for me from not caring about school, not really knowing, not really considering anything other than...
And not thinking about what you wanted to do in the
not
future.
At all. I didn't even consider it.
So it's Noma was, in a way, a happy accident.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Renee Redzepi. If you're interested in thought-provoking writing about food, pick up a copy of the Fermentation Bible. And if you ever find yourself in Copenhagen, head to Noma. So long, Serious Eaters. Thank you, Renee. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
I have so many things I want to talk to you about.